So by the Nagarjuna, who is considered as the second Buddha, who have came to this world to benefit all the sentient beings. So now I seem to forget the stanza, but anyway. So if one wishes to attain the state of Buddhahood, then one needs to have all the means and the accumulations necessary. As it is stated in the precious comment, the main three causes, the three parts that is needed, the profound emptiness, wisdom, perception, and the great compassion and bodhicitta. And the source of all the happiness is that whether our mind is being transformed and tamed, if one's mind is being tamed and controlled and disciplined, so then we can attain the highest form of happiness. And having tamed and disciplined the mind completely, including eliminating all the obscurations and its imprints, then one attains the highest form of the Buddhahood. And the means of attaining that kind of that state of Buddhahood has to be something which is combined with all the necessary requirements. And the greatest antidote to destroy the afflicted emotions is the understanding of the profound wisdom. And with the help of this profound wisdom understanding, one will be able to clear the obscurations to the omniscient mind. And in order to attain that, we need to have the backing of the bodhicitta, the ultimate bodhicitta, which is also the understanding of the profound wisdom, the profound emptiness. And if you have the wish to attain enlightenment in order to liberate all the sentient beings and clear their sufferings, so the greater force of that kind of intention is your intention to attain the omniscient minds will also increase. And such a kind of bodhicitta, which is also dependent again on the mind of compassion and also the understanding of the profound emptiness, and these three are the means to attain the highest form of Buddhahood. And now we have attained the higher rebirths of human with all leisures and advantages, and also we have the power to discriminate between the wrong and the right and the positive and negative. Even though you have the power to discriminate between the negative and positivity, but it also depends on where you use it and where you utilize it, whether you use it in the right way or the wrong way. But if you utilize it just for the material things and without being able to tame your mind well, and of course it is good that you can use the kind of wisdom for general use and for material progress. But if you lack the real mind of a mind that wish to benefit other sentient beings, then of course there is a great danger that you might make mistakes. And it may become a source of indulging in negativities, and it will become a source for oneself, which leads to the sufferings and other bad things. So through your mind of discrimination or with the power of wisdoms, and if one you have planned many things in ahead, and with that if you accumulated a lot of negative karmas, then at the end, it will result in you having needed to repent and regretful at the end of the life. So that power of wisdom, the discriminating awareness wisdom within you, you have to utilize it in a positive way. So in this world, which is where there are a lot of different philosophy and traditions, and each tradition teaches about the compassion and the love, and each has teaches about the commitments and the rules that one has to abide. And all of these teachings and advices and commitments are used in order to generate beneficial qualities in all the human beings. But how to turn or how to use these qualities and facilities in order to benefit as a sentient being is also depends on how you use your wisdom. So if one is able to use these things in order to benefit all the sentient beings, and there are a lot of qualities, the ordinary, the immediate ones, and the ultimate ones. So we are very fortunate to having met with such a kind of teaching. And even for the such kind of teachings by Buddha, and at present, the Buddha's teaching, which are currently existing on this world at that moment, is basically based on the three trainings, and also the two vehicles, the great and the Theravada traditions, both based on the practice of three trainings. It has to be based in this way, is both similar. And here, the Buddhism in Tibet, the Tibetan Buddhism, which is collective of all the Vajrayana and Sutrayana teachings. So such a kind of teachings, which is collective of both the Sutrayana and Vajrayana, and such a kind of text which explains about these kind of teachings is about 100 volumes of Kangyur, the direct discourse from Buddha, and the commentary text ran into another 200 volumes composed by the great Indian masters. And also the Vajrayana and the Tantric text commentaries composed by the great Yogi Saraha and others. So in totally, there is about 200-something canons of sutras and texts. So in short, this old text explains all the general qualities and about all the phenomena. And also through logical reasoning, it proves that the self-centered feeling and also the mind which perceives, which apprehends the things as existing by itself to something as a negative. So if one went under the influence of these afflicted emotions, then what are the negativities that one will face? And since everyone needs happiness and does not need suffering, so in this way, this kind of text will be great helpful. The kind of human rebirth that we have to utilize, and we have to think that we are very fortunate, and we doesn't waste it. That kind of fortunate human rebirth doesn't go in vain. So therefore, from day to day, we have to utilize, we have to think in such a way that this doesn't go in vain. And with the basis on it, in order to practice the paths to attain higher attainments. So in order to understand, you have to listen to it and you have to hear the sutras and the texts. But from what you have to listen to or hear, it is only the 200 and something volumes of the texts. And one must not pay the utmost importance to the worldly things, or one must not use these teachings in order to have realizations or attainment something in this life, but rather for the future and the subsequent lives. So currently the summarize or the short transmission about the Lamrim teachings by Lama Tsongkhapa is the thing to be given now. As I have discussion before, so between them, you have, when you have some time in the morning and the evening, you must go through again and again. And are you doing that? It is very important. And even today, when you are listening to the teachings and the transmissions, even though I do not have much understanding and even there is not much time, but when there is some the difficulties and importance, I'm trying to explain a little bit. And of course, and as a kind of lineage, whatever we have, the kind of lineage which comes from our masters. But in reality, there are a lot of changes now. And since from Tibet, now we are in the India as a refugee. And I've written to the praise of the great 17 Indian masters that when the world, when there is the highest material progress and development, there is usually a huge source of distraction due to the material progress and development. Even among the monks, when they do the studies and practices in the monastery, but they at the end they leave the monastery. Even few, they wanted to attain the Geshe degree as soon as possible time. But after they attained the Geshe degree, their main ambition and the goal was to earn money and dollar. Even in India, they doesn't feel much attached to India also because the Indian rupee is not so powerful, and compared to that, the dollar is more powerful. So therefore, they are trying to find ways to go to overseas, how to finding different ways, even paying money and gifts. So if one indulges in such kind of things, then it's a great mistake. Having studied in a monastery for so long, the best goal that one is to attain is to have the highest attainments possible in this lifetime. If we have a look at the lineage of the masters, we can see it through their lifelong history, how they have worked hard in the earlier part of life and at the end of the life, how they have attained these kinds of states. As stated by Kepchum Norsang in his prayers, and also he's the master of Second Dalai Lama Jindun Jiazu. And first, he studied the text for many years, and later he went to retreat and meditative in the mountains for many over 40 years. And as it is written in one of his writings, that if it's written that if he practiced well, then he will be attained the highest attainment of Buddhahood at the shortest time. So they are by themselves disciples and guru. And having studied the text and meditating about it, with the power of listening to and reading the text, he's been able to clear or eliminate the wrong views and attain the highest wisdom. And he went to the remote areas in the mountains where there are no other people to be seen and practice. So these great beings are having studied the Dharma for so many years, but having attained the highest form of attainment. So these are very few, but there are few who doesn't understand the meaning, but they understand the meaning of the text and all, but they just went to retreat for meditation in the mountains and claimed themselves as a yogi and being stay in meditation on retreat. Then just spend the time in the mountains doing some tailoring things, stitching things, or just sleeping. So it's of no use. So if for having a great meditation, it's very important that we have a great hearing or listening to the text first. So if one do not have the vast hearing or listening to the text and understanding of the scriptures, so if you have the small and the minimal hearing or understanding, that with that, if you just spend the whole day again and again, it won't be of use. So if you have studied or understand the vast amount of the sutras and the texts and its contents and meanings, so of course there will it will make a big difference in order to eliminate the source of the afflicted emotions and have high and gaining high attainments. And the second level is staying back at the monasteries, having studied all the texts and teachings, the monks and the students of the monastery, through the debating and the philosophical studies. Sometimes I feel to attend enlightenment, but even this one is more greater importance. Having studied in the same monastery for so many years and teaching the students and showing them the path to liberation is even greater than that. It's important that you attain enlightenment and attain higher rebirths, but with teachings and guiding all those scholars, you were planting the seed to lead all those disciples to the highest form of attainment. So there are many elder senior monks who are no more, who have really worked hard to set up the basis foundation for what is present. And of course, even though they are no more here, but we always remember them. It is just in our recollection now. But the other practitioners and geishas, you must stay back in your monastery, and you are grown up in this monastery. You have studied this text. And whatever understanding and realizations you have gained, it is very important that you pass it to the newer generation. And nowadays, in this world, there are many Tibetan Buddhist centers all over the world in different countries. And also there are some Dhamma teachers and resident teachers. It's also very important, as I have told yesterday, that if you sell Dharma and if you explain wrongly about the teachings of Buddha, in reality, you are just deceiving others. So taking this example, so with your wrong explanations, so with that, if other people get a notion that the Buddhism in general, which is prevalent in Tibet, has some mistake or not correct, then it will bring a bad image to the teachings in general. So therefore, those teachers who are there must have a huge responsibility, and they must be aware of that. So if one is able to do all things properly, then as Lama Tsongkhapa has stated, that where the Buddha's teachings has not arrived and very arrived but declined, may I be able to spread the teachings of Buddha once again. So it's very important for everyone to visualize in this way. And if the monks, all of you here, doesn't come to the monastery just to have a living or just to find your daily life or just to find your food, it is not that. And among some monks, sometimes they're disrobed, but even though they are disrobed, but whatever you have studied in the monastery, it is important that you have not forgotten that understandings and qualities. And now, for those who have the faith in the Buddhism, it's not just enough in this moment, and just having a devotion or a faith in the teachings and the qualities of the master is not enough. So even for the lay people, it is very important that they themselves become someone who really understand the teachings. And the whole society in itself has to be something which has the understanding of the Dharma. And the teachings of Lord Buddha, which runs a 200 volume, is not just being taught for the monks, but in all the practitioners. And since all those texts and sutras are meant for all, except for some Vinaya texts, which are not meant for all, so other than that, all the texts, there are no discriminations. So it is meant for all the devotees, irrespective of whether they are monk or lay people. But those, of course, who are studying in the monasteries, they go by each word and sentence. It may be difficult for the layperson to have such understanding by word and sentence, but it's important that they have a general understanding about the scriptures in. So, as I used to say about 21st century Buddhists, so if not that, if you have so many sources of distractions in this materialistic development era, and inside if you do not have the real understanding and realization, so then the levels and the weight will not be at par. So now, in order to give a short transmission of the Lam Rim Chemo, the great treatise on the path to enlightenment. Page number 15. Training the mind in the stages of path for persons of great capacity. Training the mind in the stages of path for persons of greater capacity is presented in three sections. Page number 15. Showing that developing the spirit of enlightenment is the only entrance to Mahayana. How to develop the spirit of enlightenment, how to learn the Bodhisattva deeds after developing the spirit of enlightenment. Showing that developing the spirit of enlightenment is only entrance to the Mahayana. Given that you should enter the Mahayana in the above mentioned manner, what is the entrance? The conqueror taught that there are no Mahayana vehicles other than the perfection vehicle and the tantra vehicle. Whichever of these two you enter, the only entrance is the spirit of enlightenment. Once you have generated this spirit in your mind, you are recognized as a Mahayana practitioner, even though you may not have generated any other good quality. When you separate it from the spirit, no matter what other good qualities you may have, such as the knowledge of emptiness, etc., you lapse from the Mahayana, falling to the level of a Saraka and the like. This point is taught in many Mahayana scriptures and also proved by reason. The initial entrance into the Mahayana is determined by the development of the spirit alone. A subsequent departure from the Mahayana is determined by its loss alone. Hence, being a Mahayana practitioner or not is contingent upon the existence or non-existence of this spirit. You become a conqueror's child immediately after generating this spirit. As Shantideva was engaging in the Bodhisattva's deed says, the moment helpless beings bound in the prison of cyclic existence develop the spirit of enlightenment. They are called the children of Sugatas, and also today I am born in the Buddha's family. I have become a child of the Buddhas. Thus it says that once you have generated this spirit, you are called a Bodhisattva. Moreover, the life of Maitreya speaks of persons being Bodhisattvas if they have this spirit, even though they have not trained in the Bodhisattva deeds. O child of good lineage, although a precious diamond breaks, it still outshines all special ornaments of gold. It does not lose its name, precious diamond, and it still removes all poverty. O child of good lineage, similarly, those who have developed the precious diamond, which is the spirit of enlightenment and the aspiration to omniscience, although they lack its application, still outshine all the golden ornaments, which are the good qualities of the Saraka and Pratigya Buddha. They do not lose the name of Bodhisattva, and they still remove all poverty of cyclic existence. Also, the protector Nagarjuna in his precious garland says, if you and the world wish to obtain unexcelled enlightenment, its root is the spirit of enlightenment, firm as the king of mountains. Further, the tantra bestowing the initiation of Vajrapani says, O great Bodhisattvas, Manjushri, this tantra mantra is exceedingly secret, unfathomable, very profound and vast. It is unsuitable to teach it to sinful beings. Vajrapani, you will say this mantra is very rare. Since I have not heard about it, to whom should I be explained? Vajrapani replied, O Manjushri, once those who have entered meditation on the spirit of enlightenment have attained it, Manjushri, these Bodhisattvas who practice the Bodhisattva deeds, the door to Tantra should enter into the Tantric mantra of the great sublime wisdom initiation. However, those who have not fully attained the spirit of enlightenment should not enter it. They should not even enter and see the mantra. However, do not teach them the gestures and mantras. When page number 17, aspiration to the supreme vehicle is the seed. Wisdom is the mother for generating the Buddha qualities. Thus, the spirit of enlightenment is like the seed of father, and the wisdom which knows selflessness is like the mother. For example, since a Tibetan father cannot have a boy who is Indian, Mongolian, and so forth, he is fixed because of the child's lineage. Whereas a Tibetan mother can give birth to a variety of boys and is therefore the general cause of her child. And the Sarvakas and Pratika Buddhas also depend on wisdom, for the protector of Nagarjuna in the praise of the perfection of wisdom says, the path of liberation upon which the Buddhas, Pratika Buddhas and Sarvakas definitely rely is just this. It is certain that there are no doubts. The perfection of wisdom is the mother of both Hinayana and Mahayana disciples, for it is also spoken of as the mother. Consequently, do not distinguish Hinayana and Mahayana by the wisdom that knows emptiness, but by the spirit of enlightenment and the greatly effective bodhisattva deeds. Nagarjuna's precious garland says, since the aspirational prayers, deeds, and the complete dedication of the bodhisattva are not explained in the Sarvaka vehicle, how then could you become a bodhisattva through it? Thus, he says that you differentiate these vehicles not by philosophical view but by deeds. If in this way, even the wisdom that knows emptiness is not a specifically Mahayana path, it goes without saying that there are other shared paths as well. Hence, it is a clear indication that you have very little familiarity with the teachings when, after you have taken the spirit of enlightenment to be the crucial instruction, you do not practice it, but rather, recalling it at the beginning of a session only in words, you intently make great effort at some single small portion of the path. In general, just as both father and mother are needed to have a child, you need the entire complement of method and wisdom to have a complete faith. In particular, you need the main method, the spirit of enlightenment, and the main wisdom, the knowledge of emptiness. If you only meditate on one of them and diligently seek merely to be liberated from cyclic existence, then you have to meditate on the meaning of emptiness, the selflessness, without mistaking meditative serenity for insight. Nonetheless, if you claim to be a Mahayana practitioner, then you must be practicing the spirit of enlightenment as well. While you need wisdom to prevent falling into the extreme of cyclic existence, and you need compassion to prevent falling into the extreme of peace, so wisdom does not prevent you from falling into the extreme of peace. As the Venerable Maitreya says in his Ornament for Clear Knowledge, through the knowledge you do not abide in cyclic existence, through compassion you do not abide in peace. If you are a Mahayana practitioner, you must practice the spirit of enlightenment, because even in the Hinayana you do not fall into the extreme of cyclic existence, and the main thing to be prevented on the Bodhisattva path is falling into the extreme of peace. When the Conqueror's children, who validly interpret the commentaries on the Conqueror's intended meaning, generate just this precious spirit in their minds, they are amazed and think, such a marvelous path has arisen. However, they do not have this same feeling when they attain a slight good quality pleasing to ordinary persons. Engaging in the Bodhisattva deeds says, this altruistic spirit which is not born in others even for their own sake is a special jewel of the mind, bringing an unprecedented wonder. And also, is there any virtue equal to this? Is there any such friend? Is there any such merit? And also, I bow down to the body of anyone who has generated this sacred jewel of the mind, and it is the quintessential butter churned from the milk of the sublime teaching. Thus, the spirit of enlightenment is the supreme instruction extracted from the quintessential of the scriptures. Therefore, although the glorious Atisha held the Madhyamaka view and his teacher Salingba held the Saudantrika view, Atisha attained the spirit of enlightenment by depending on him and therefore took him to be the kindest of his gurus. If those who know the core of scriptures look at this part of Atisha's biography, you will gain a great understanding of a key point of the path. If you generate this spirit in an uncontrived manner after making much effort, you will be imbued with the spirit of enlightenment, and then even giving a tiny morsel of food to a crow will be considered a bodhisattva deed. However, if you lack this spirit, even offering a universe of 3 billion volts seems filled with jewels will not be considered a bodhisattva deed. Likewise, action suggests the perfections from ethical discipline through wisdom, as well as meditation or Yorosabasa deity and meditation on the channels, rains, drops, etc. will also not be considered Bodhisattva deeds. If your precious spirit has not been actualized, the key point of the practice, no matter how long you try to cultivate virtue, you will not accomplish much. It is like cutting grass with a very dull sickle. And the wish to benefit other beings like Bodhicitta is as I have explained yesterday, even if it is seen by animals or human beings, it is the source of all the happiness. So such a kind of wish or intention to benefit others, which is the Bodhicitta, has to be combined with the wisdom as means of wisdom. So such a kind of mind, is very profound and great and vast, so it has the potential to benefit the maximum number of sentient beings. So for us, if you are able to gain the effortlessly generating bodhicitta, it is of really great. But even though one is not able to have that, but a general intent for enlightenment, even if you are able to generate such a thing, is, or if we are trained in this, trained in the path of attaining it, then as I explained yesterday, immediately you will have a peace of mind and you will develop a sense of strength within you. As Chandadeva said, as long as the space remains in sentient being and sentient being remains, may two remain to expel their sufferings. Similarly, one must generate your mind in such that it will generate only the mind to benefit other sentient beings. And the great, very hard to achieve practice of bodhisattvas is something which is useful. And one is to recall it in mind that it is something which is practiced by the bodhisattva, and I have been also able to follow it. And as stated in the Guide to the Bodhisattva's Guide, that once you have the bodhicitta, it will clear all the sorrows and obstacles. So who will be there not to embrace it and take it into their hand when they have such a kind of mind? And the bodhicitta is the source of the medicine to cure all the illness, and also the means to liberate all the sentient beings from lower realms. And also it is the nectar out of all the taste, and also the butter which we churn from the milk. So there is nothing greater and more important to practice than this, which has been explained by the Buddha. And if you want to stay for a long life, the rituals or the means for extending your life, this is the bodhicitta is also the source to extend your lifespan. And if you indulge in rituals to extend your life, of course there may be some blessings and beneficial, but rather if you generate a mind of serving or benefiting others, as I explained yesterday. But in reality, how much your mind is of the noble cause, and how much your mind is pure in terms of benefiting others. So with the result of that, your immune system will be even stronger to fight against the illness. And if you have a constantly hostile against others, and if you constantly or frequently generate a mind of hatred and hostility against others, your immune system will also degenerate. And nowadays, this is also explained by the medical practitioners. So the bodhicitta is said to be the means for extending your lifespan. It's also true. And in order to cure the illness, it's also a means of medicine, the bodhicitta. So if you have such a kind of mind, the illness won't occur to or come to you. Even if you have such kind of illness, but it will be cured at this shortest possible time. And now, since our mindstream is under the influence of affective emotions, but even though from now on itself, if you train in the mind wish to benefit others, including benefiting even the small insects and animals, let go of the human beings. So if you strive in this mind to benefit the maximum number of sentient beings, then the daily life and the whatever time is something you have to visualize as being useful. And also the attainment of, of course, the attainment of Nirvana or the omniscient mind is actually getting nearer and nearer each day. And also to generate the understanding of profound emptiness or the generate such a kind of wisdom is also near. Sometimes it may be a kind of boast to say that even though our body is by nature a suffering which clings to the samsaric goal, but our mind can be very near to Nirvana, at peace. So therefore, the arahats were liberated from the samsara, who has eliminated the afflicted emotions, and they have done a great deed of the eliminating the afflicted emotions. But in terms of benefiting other sentient beings, it's not so great. They eliminated the afflictions in order to benefit himself. So of course, it's something to be admired, but reality, in terms of energy and strength, it's not so high. As it is prayed that as it is praised, like, may all the merits and as the Nagarjuna prays in the precious garland, and also in the praise of the Bodhicitta, that the Bodhicitta is the source of all the happiness, source of like medicine to cure all the illness. And of course, if we have to refer someone as very courageous and someone as very intelligent, then it is the Bodhisattvas who are the courageous and intelligent. So even though you're not able to generate the genuine one, but if you try to generate the kind of aspiration or intention to benefit the sentient beings, it is of very fortunate and worthy, and at the time of dying, you don't have to request other for the merits or to rebirth, to have a better rebirth. You don't have to depend on any kind of rituals to get a better rebirth in the next life. With the power of the bodhicitta or that kind of aspiration intention within you, it can guarantee you a better rebirth in the next life. So if you have such a kind of mind, of course, you yourself is the one who is the most benefited from it. But in the small being's capacity, it is explained that the high rebirths is the main source of attainments. If you indulge in killing, of course, you will generate a negative karma, as normally we say in our, I am a monk, otherwise I will not leave him. So we sometimes say in this way, I am a monk, otherwise I would have killed him. So it shows that you do not have love and compassion for the others. It's only that you have a self-centered feeling for yourself, feeling yourself as more important. But if you have the mind to benefit others, of course, the other's life is more important. Other lives you consider more important and precious than your own life. So how can you indulge in something which brings harm to the other's life, which is same as precious as your own? So even though the physical actions are same, but not to indulge in killing, the physical activity is same, but with the differences in motivation, it will make a big difference. If you do not indulge in such kind of negative actions, because you will feel sad or suffering, and not to indulge in such things, caring about other precious things, then of course, even though these two activities are at par, but through the motivation, it will make a big difference. So similarly, indulging in telling lies or harsh words or even rape, so all these negative activities, indulgence in negative things, is that the other person is to indulge in such activities towards other person is not appropriate, because that other person is the same as precious and important and sacred as your own. So with such a kind of motivation, and also combined by a mind to attain the omniscient state of Buddhahood, And if you are able to generate such a kind of mind, then that is the greatest and the highest. So the main advice or the nectar of the teachings that we have to derive from the 200 volumes of Buddha's teaching is to the bodhicitta to benefit other sentient beings as much as possible. Even for myself, being the guru and the lama, facing you from the throne, trying to practice as much as possible in this, and you all have to follow the same. Page number 21, the development of the spirit through four conditions. Page number 20, how to develop the spirit of enlightenment. How to develop the spirit of enlightenment is explained in four parts. How the spirit of enlightenment depends on certain causes to arise. The stages of training in the spirit of enlightenment. The measure of producing the spirit of enlightenment. How to adopt the spirit of enlightenment through his ritual. How the spirit of enlightenment depends on certain causes to arise is explained in three parts. The development of the spirit through the four conditions. The development of the spirit through the four causes. The development of the spirit through four strengths. The development of the spirit through four conditions. You develop the spirit of enlightenment either by seeing for yourself the inconceivable power of Buddhas or Bodhisattvas, or by hearing about them from a reliable person and then thinking, this enlightenment in which they abide or which they pursue is very powerful. Although you may not have seen or heard of such power in this way, you can develop the spirit by listening to the scriptural collections which take unsurpassed enlightenment as a point of departure and then aspiring to the sublime wisdom of Buddha. So this century is now a century of ignorance, jealousy, stinginess. So if you look at the world in general, it looks like they are all taken willingly under the influence of affected emotions. With the effect of affected emotions, all the troubles and the problems all over the world arises. When somebody goes under the influence of afflictions, emotions, then of course one ends up indulging in negativities. So all the negativities actions arises from the sources of afflicted emotions. Although you have not seen the decline of the teaching, you think it is difficult to generate the spirit of enlightenment of even a Savaka or a Pratigya Buddha in these terrible times in which there is a preponderance of ignorance, shamelessness, lack of embarrassment, jealousy, stinginess, and the like. Concerning how the spirit of enlightenment arising from these four conditions, it is said that they inspire you to attain great enlightenment, so a desire to attain enlightenment arises. The ways in which this happens are as follows. After you see or hear about supernormal powers, you are avid, thinking, I will attain such an enlightenment, then generate the spirit of enlightenment. Through hearing about the good qualities of a Buddha from an instructor, you first develop faith and then there arises a desire to attain these qualities. On finding the thought of decline of the Mahayana teaching unbearable, you develop the desire to attain a Buddha's sublime wisdom. In regard to this last point, you see that if the teaching does not disappear, the suffering of living beings can be stopped. So even though your objective is indeed to remove suffering, nevertheless, the principal condition for the spirit of enlightenment arising is your inability to bear the fact that the teaching might disappear. Otherwise, this way of developing the spirit will repeat the explanation of how the spirit arises in dependence on compassion. After you see how rare this most purposeful spirit is, you develop a desire to attain Buddhahood, spurred on principally by this awareness. With regard to the two components of the spirit of enlightenment, the desire to attain enlightenment and the aim of welfare of all beings, this full development of the spirit of enlightenment is established in terms of producing a desire to attain enlightenment and is not established in terms of aim. Without the desire to attain Buddhahood that comes from cultivating faith in the Buddha's good qualities, you cannot overcome the sense of contentment that thinks peace alone is sufficient to fulfill your own aims. The desire to attain Buddhahood on account of training and love and compassion and seeing the fulfillment of others' aims as a necessity can eradicate the sense of contentment that thinks your peace alone is sufficient to fulfill others' aims. But cannot stop the sense of contentment that thinks peace is enough for your own aims. Besides this desire to attain Buddhahood that comes from cultivating faith in the Buddha's good qualities, there is no other way to stop the sense of contentment that thinks your peace alone is sufficient to fulfill your own aims. Indeed, you do need to overcome the sense of contentment that peace alone is enough to accomplish your own welfare, because Hinayana practitioners who are merely liberated from cyclic existence have only a partial elimination of faults and a partial knowledge and thus lack the perfect fulfillment of their own aims. These practitioners are liberated from the problems of cyclic existence but not from the problems of peace. So now we have to understand what we have to say, like the new practitioners who does not have real understanding about the text. When we say to consider others more important to you, which some people take it as something to disregard, not to pay any importance to self. And also when some speaks about compassion, that means to consider others as more precious and important, but do not have any consideration for self. At the beginning, it is important that you have to have a compassion and love for yourself. And with that kind of mind, then of course, you have to generate the equanimity mind towards you and the other beings. So if you do not have the love for yourself, it is impossible to generate the mind which wants to benefit other sentient beings. But how you have to love yourself, how you have to feel compassion for yourself. So you should not do it in a foolish way. When you say to consider yourself precious, if you just think merely about yourself, when you do not understand that your happiness and enjoyment is also related to others, and also that your happiness is also arises in relation to others, and also the higher rebirths of human rebirth and all these things also arises from others. In this life, for example, your clothes and your foods and every daily necessities also depend on other people. So the facilities of this life itself and the next higher rebirths of next and subsequent life and also the ultimate liberation state of liberation state is also depend on other. So once you have the higher rebirth, so with that kind of rebirths, if you are able to benefit other, then that higher rebirth becomes great purposeful. So in terms of the state of Buddhahood, as explained in the Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way, so since Buddha is considered as the source of all the virtues and all the sentient beings pray to the Buddha, but Buddha emerges from the sentient beings, so why don't you being respectful for the sentient beings? So others is the source of happiness and joy for you. So if you benefit the other, which is the source of all your joy and pleasant emotions, so of course you will gain happiness. So some people who does not have a good understanding about exchanging the self with others, they let go of the self. So this is not the right way to do. So we just think of ourselves, consider ourselves as more important, and we doesn't care anything about the others. So this is a foolish way of caring about oneself. So with the wisdom and wisdom with the power of discriminating awareness, if you're able to benefit others, as I normally say, the bodhisattvas are very clever and intelligent persons who fulfill about who help other sentient beings, because with the help of bodhicittas, the bodhisattvas benefit others, but ultimately they are themselves the one which is benefited. So the bodhicitta is not something that is beneficial only to the others and not to yourself. So this is completely wrong. So here, as it is stated, it is very important you have aspiration to attain the enlightenment. You must, as stated in the Abhisamaya Alamkara, that the mind of bodhicitta, the development of the spirit of enlightenment is the desire for perfect enlightenment for others' welfare. And also the mind of bodhicitta is to be combined by two aspirations, two intentions. One to benefit other sentient beings, and other to wish to attain the enlightenment for the sake of other people. Page number 24. The development of the spirit through four causes. You develop the spirit of enlightenment through relying on a perfect lineage, being sustained by a teacher, compassion toward living beings, not being disheartened by the difficulties of cyclic existence. The development of the spirit through four strengths. You develop the spirit through relying on four strengths: the strength of yourself, the desire to attain perfect enlightenment through your own power; the strength of others, the desire to attain perfect enlightenment through others' power; the strength of the cause, developing the spirit by having been familiar with the Mahayana and now merely hearing priests of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas; the strength of the application in this life, being accustomed for a long time to such virtuous activities as relying upon an excellent being and reflecting on the teachings you have heard. Furthermore, Asanga's Bodhisattva levels says that after you depend on the four causes and four conditions, you will generate a firm spirit of enlightenment if you develop it from your own strength or from the strength of the cause. It is not firm if you develop it from others' strength or from the strength of application. Once you have understood well that the teaching in general and the Mahayana teaching in particular are about to disappear. So without having a deep understanding and examining, just like a daily routine, something like the bodhicittas and compassions are just something written in the text. Just following some scriptural texts and quoting them, and it is a foolish way to do that. Mindlessly following others, not through the habit of custom, but through your own strength. On page number 26, compassion, the entrance to the Mahayana. The stages of training in the spirit of enlightenment. The training in the spirit of enlightenment has two parts. The training based on the seven cause and effect, personal instructions in the lineage descended from the great elder. The training based on the teachings of the conqueror's child, Chandideva. The training of the mind through the seven cause and effect. So for certain kind of persons, this cause and effect instruction is very effective. But for other people, the method of generating bodhicitta through exchanging self with other is more effective. So therefore, the exchanging the self with other, and the lineage is also being explained as a vast contact and practiced. And from the seven cause and effect instruction, from looking at all the mothers as sentient beings and recollecting their kindness, but in exchanging self with others, one has to look at all the sentient beings as equal, and not only that, even at the ultimate, even your enemy, which you consider as your enemy or force, you have to look at him as one of the sentient beings who has benefited you the most. And the mind which wishes to benefit others, the antidote or the opposite of that mind is the one which wishes to benefit others. So therefore, for one to have a practice of compassion, it is important that the practice of patience should be there. So patience is not something to be practiced against your teacher or your families or someone who helps you or who loves you. The practice of patience is to be practiced against someone who makes you angry or who is hostile against you. So the enemy is the one to whom you have to practice the perfection of patience. So if you think from this perspective, since we are very familiar with the hostility and arising of anger, so it's very important that we practice the patience towards others. But the patience means not to harm others at any cost, and the term anger or the xiedang itself means, appears like someone is hostility from itself. But that kind of person who appears innately hostility towards you, but one has to think that it is all created from your mind. And with the help of the compassionate mind, we have to able to cut off the source of developing the anger and hostility. As I normally say, we have to make a distinction between the action and the one who performs it. For example, the attachment and the desire, we have to see the person who indulges in negativities as someone else. And as from the person's point of view, the agent who performs that is from that who has committed that negative actions, and we have to feel repent towards is from the agent's point of view. But the action which he have performed or committed, so that is to be abandoned and eliminated. And if there is a means to prevent it, of course we have to do it. But many people, when we speak about practicing or meditating patience, it does not mean that you have to take loss or you have to accept the defeat all the time. It does not mean that you have to be defeated. You have to accept the loss and defeat all the time. When the other people committed in negative activities towards you, of course, the one who is being affected ultimately is the other person himself or herself. So therefore, sometimes there are means of using the anger and hostility towards a positive way, but that is a very high state level practice. So first, practicing through the seven cause and effect instruction. The seven causes and effects are the spirit of enlightenment from which perfect Buddhahood arises. This spirit arises from the wholehearted resolve. This resolve arises from compassion. Compassion arises from love. Love arises from the wish to repay your mother's kindness. The wish to repay your kindness arises from recollecting their kindness. And the recollection of their kindness arises from recognizing all beings are your mothers. The training based on and the compassion, the great compassion, has to be combined by the wisdom which perceives, which comprehends the great profound emptiness, as Nagarjuna has explained in the Precious Garland. As with the, also the Guhya Samuja root commentary text also reads that which explains that about the profound emptiness, which first refuted the idea of the mind-only schools, and then referring to the highest Mother Mega school's way of meditating. And here, when this speaks about attachment, the attachment means, attachment refers to the compassion, as is stated in the commentary text of Abhisamayalamkara, that being attached to the sentient beings when generates the highest form of compassion. Even though you have the possibility and the strength to be liberated from the sufferings, and even though you indulge or you go under the influence of those emotions and sufferings, then of course this is a source and the person whom you have to feel compassionate towards. If a certain kind of illness, if we see the cure for that, of course, then we have to find the ways to to cure it. But if the illness is something which cannot be cured, then there is no remedies that or medication that we can find. Of similarly, when we understand that the suffering in those sentient beings is something which can be stopped or which can be eliminated by practicing, so in this way, we have to feel compassionate towards those sentient beings so that their sufferings can come to an end. And those kind of those sufferings which arises from the comprehending of self as self-sustaining, and that apprehending the self as self-sustaining by itself is a wrong view, and to see that ignorant mind and to see the antidote of that, one has to practice in this way to gain the compassion. So if there is a huge river stream and if somebody is being drawn in that, and if there is a possibility that you can save that person from drowning and lifted him from the river and put it to the other side of the river, if you see the potential or the possibility to save that kind of person, then of course you must engage in saving him up. But if there is no possibility to save, then other than praying, there's nothing that you can do it. And the scientist now explains that when one generates the mind of compassion, aside of the brain, there is some kind of moment in the brain, and which happens when we practice compassion. So therefore, it shows that when one generates the mind of compassion, which wishes to liberate other from sufferings, so the power or the strength of the that compassion gives a strength or power to the brain also. And when someone goes under huge suffering, that part of brain also makes movement. So then I told him jokingly that the brain is very foolish, because when one goes under suffering, when oneself goes under suffering and when compassion arises, although that same part is moving, then jokingly I say, when somebody cries and so when we cry, the eye drops, and this happens to sometimes even when we have when we are under huge sufferings, we cry, and also when we are very happy, sometimes we accidentally cry. So the motivation is different. The first is extremely happiness, and the other is extremely sad, but the brain, the activities of brain is same. So I'm telling the scientists jokingly that the brain is very foolish. If the brain is intelligent, then if the brain is clever, then when one is happy and crying, then the eye drops has to come from the right eye, and when it goes under the suffering, it has to come from the left side. Then we can make a difference between it. But it is not possible to make the difference here. The reason why I bring this topic here is that when we generated the mind of compassion, a part of the brain where there is a moment, there is a certain kind of activity or the moment. So compassion, since it has the capacity to benefit others. The action, so the compassion makes the brain results in a kind of activity or moment in itself. But with that moment and activity, and if it sees that if the one can make a difference there, then maybe a greater moment. And of course, then if there is nothing that you can do, even though you feel compassionate, then we can just feel sorry for them. Other than that, there is nothing we can do. And of course, the Nagarjuna and Asanga are really great practitioners. And of course, from the perspective of the writings, and the Nagarjuna's intelligence is very deep and very high. Once your mind is moved for great compassion, you will definitely make the commitment to free all living beings from cyclic existence. If your compassion is weak, you will not. Therefore, compassion is important in the beginning, because feeling responsible to free all beings requires great compassion, and because if you do not take on this responsibility, you are not ranked as a Mahayana practitioner. In this way, the teaching of Akshayamati Sutra states, furthermore, Venerable Sariputra, the great compassion of the Bodhisattvas is inexhaustible. Why? Because it is prerequisite. Venerable Sariputra, just as the moment of the breath is prerequisite for the life force of a human being, the great compassion of the Bodhisattvas is prerequisite for correctly reaching the Mahayana. Also, the foremost of Gaya states, on page number 29, Manjushri, what is it that motivates the Bodhisattva's deed? What is its object? Manjushri said, Devadat, the great compassion motivates the Bodhisattva's deeds. Its object is living beings. Thus, compassion is the basis of engaging in the deeds, because when you see that you will not live up to your commitment without training in the two vast collections, you set about the difficult work of amassing these vast collections. The importance of compassion in the middle. You may develop the spirit of enlightenment at one time and then engage in the Bodhisattva deeds. But when you see that living beings are innumerable and act improperly, that the training of very difficult and limitless, and that you need an immeasurable length of time, you may lose heart and fall into the Hinayana. However, by accustoming yourself to increasingly greater compassion, that is not just a one-time development, you become less concerned with your own happiness or suffering and are not discouraged at providing providing others' welfare. Therefore, you easily accomplish all the collections of Kamala Shila's first stages of meditation states. Because Bodhisattvas are moved by great compassion, they diligently strive to be very helpful to others without considering themselves. Consequently, they engage in accumulating the two collections, which is very difficult, tiring, and requires a long period of time. As a seal of engaging and developing the power of faith, Sutra says, one who has great compassion will always take on the life of suffering and will always give up a happy life in order to help all beings to mature. A Bodhisattva was engaged like this in something that is extremely difficult to do, they will fully and quickly complete the collections. They will definitely attain the high state of omniscience. Therefore, the sole root of a Buddha's qualities is compassion. The importance of compassion at the end. Based on the power of great compassion, Buddhas, even when they reach their goal, do not abide in peace like Hinayana practitioner, but continue to work for the welfare of beings as long as space remains, for without compassion, Buddhas will be like Sarakas. Kamala Shila's second stage of meditation says, since the Bhagavan Buddhas are imbued with great compassion, they remain until the end of realm in which beings dwell, even though they have attained the complete perfection of their own aims, and also the sole cause of the non-abiding nirvana of the Bhagavanas is great compassion. The glorious Chandrakriti taught that just as seeds, water, and ripenings are important in the beginning, middle, and at the end of a harvest. Similarly, compassion is important in the beginning, middle, and end of the harvest of Buddhahood. His commentary on the Middle Way states, compassion alone is regarded as a seed of a concurrent excellent harvest, as water for its development, and as a maturation in a state of long enjoyment. Therefore, at the beginning, I praise compassion. With this powerful idea in view, the compendium of the teaching sutra says, Bhagavan Bodhisattvas should not learn many teachings. Bhagavan, if Bodhisattvas grasp and know one teaching, they will have all of the Buddha's teachings in the palm of their hand. What is this one teaching? It is this great compassion. Bhagavan, with great compassion, all the Buddha's teachings are in the Bodhisattva's palm. For example, Bhagavan, whenever the precious will of a universal sovereign is there, also is the assembly of these battalions. Likewise, Bhagavan, wherever the Bodhisattva's great compassion, they are all the Buddha's teachings. For example, Bhagavan, when there is a life force, all the other sensory faculties will exist. Bhagavan, similarly, once great compassion exists, all the other Bodhisattva's qualities will appear. Once you have become convinced that compassion is the excellent key to the path through such proofs, reason and limitless scriptures, why would you not hold the spirit of enlightenment together with its roots? Compassion to be the supreme instruction. The teacher, Shana Chung, said, even though I asked for instructions from the great altar, he said nothing except renounce the world, cultivate the spirit of enlightenment. Upon hearing this, Geshe Tomtenba was embarrassed for him and said, you received the great altar's ultimate instruction. Geshe Tomtenba understood the core of the teaching. This conviction is very difficult to achieve. So I explained this in this way. Normally, and there is some importance to it. When we say about love and compassion, there is a love which exists innately from the formation of the body itself. For example, in animals, the birds, the mothers love to their offsprings, and also how the child also cares and loves their mother. So this love is because it is necessary for them. That love is requirement. That love is required in order to sustain the life of that offspring. Since they depend on each other, so therefore the mother generally develops a sense of love and compassion towards the offspring. So this does not exist through the point of Dharma teachings. It is innately existing from the formation of its body parts. And even for humans, when a mother gives birth to a son or a daughter, so the children's, the baby's survival depends on mother for many years. Some kinds of tortoise, when the mother lays the egg, the mother is already gone, and there is no relation between the egg being laid and the mother. So such a kind of few animals, so their way of sustaining is self-sustaining. So therefore, so their respect or their love for mother may not be there. And also, same in terms of mother. So I'm telling many other people, and of course there are not many people who are examining this. In the sides of ocean, there are huge tortoise and turtles on the oceans, offshores. They lay huge eggs. And if we keep the mother and the tortoise, the baby, which comes out of the keep together, they may not be able to love each other. But this is due to the biological factors. In English, the term biological. So such a kind of love, but generally such a kind of love is not at that moment or that time, but it is something useful for whole our life. So all the traditions and religions teaches about the love and compassion. The root and the fundamental is due to this. And the mother's love for the son or daughter, and they in turn their love for the mother depends on their mannerism or behavior. If the son or the daughter is respected to the mothers and listen to the mothers, and of course the mother cares for the son or daughter. And if mother doesn't care and love the son, the children, and of course the children will in turn may not develop such kind of love towards her. So therefore it depends on the mannerism and activities. So this kind of love is one-sided, but because this kind of love arises only for those person whom you care about with your care and loving, when it makes a difference. Because the arisen of this love and compassion depends on the other person's mannerism and character. It is not just the Buddhism who teach about the love and compassion, but all traditions. they speaks about all sentient beings or just all human beings love. So that compassion or love is not something demanding about the other side's mannerism or behavior. Since a single sentient beings, in terms of a single sentient beings, since they do not wish to have suffering, and they wish to have happiness, so at that as a basis, that is the basis for generating the love for all. Since they are also in terms of, in that point of view, they're all same because they wish to have happiness and do not wish to have suffering. So with that logical reasoning, we have to generate the love. And in terms of the theist followers, like one who believes in the God, all the sentient beings, all the human beings are the same creations of God, so we all have to love each other. And the love and compassion which innately exist within us, and that love and compassion which exist within us naturally, with the help of the wisdom, if one is able to examine or think in such a way that the kind of generating hostility and hatred toward others harms oneself more than that. So in this way, the intention of hatred or harming others, which harms others, in this way, the innately or naturally arisen love and compassion within us will increase. So in this way, that kind of love is arisen through seeing the reasoning. So the first love which just exists innately cannot progress limitly or towards unmeasurably. So the first compassion, which does not have the wisdom's backing, sometimes which is more as a kind of attachment towards self and one's relatives, one's loved ones, so it creates a kind of discrimination between your loved ones and your enemies. So, of course, it creates a discrimination among the societies. So it may create some obstacles. But the later one, which is backed by wisdom, is because that love looks at the other sentient being in the same way as the self. So it is very different from the first one. But to carry the anger or hostility as a means of practicing is a totally different subject. We're on page number 31, how the six other personal instructions are either causes or effects of compassion. The explanation of how the six other personal instructions are either causes or effects of compassion has two parts. How the first four personal instructions, recognition of all living beings as one murderous through the development of love, acted causes of compassion. How wholehearted resolve and the spirit of enlightenment are the effects of compassion. How the first four personal instructions, recognition of all living beings and one mothers, through the development of love, act as causes of compassion. In general, if you repeatedly consider the sufferings of living beings, you of course develop a simple desire to free them from suffering. However, to develop this attitude easily, strongly and firmly, you must first cherish these beings and have affection for them. For at present, you cannot bear for your friends to suffer. You are pleased with your enemies' sufferings, and you are indifferent to the suffering of persons toward whom you have neutral feelings, who are neither enemies nor friends. You have the first attitude because you are fond of your friends. Commensurate with your cherishing of them, you cannot bear for them to suffer. When you cherish friends to a small or medium degree, you are only able to bear their suffering slightly. When you cherish friends a great deal, you clearly cannot bear for them to suffer at all, even if they suffer just a little bit. When you see enemies suffer, not only do you not develop a desire to free them from it, but you also think, may they not be free from suffering and suffer even more. This is due to your lack of affection for them. So in compassion, we have classification which we refer to as great compassion and and sometimes also immeasurable compassion, and also compassion which wants to liberate other sentient beings from sufferings, and not just an aspiration to liberate other from sentient beings, but a determined wish that I will liberate the sentient beings from the suffering. So this is combined with an activity to benefit others. Being neither unable to bear nor pleased with the sufferings of a person toward whom you have neutral feelings results from you having neither affection nor lack of affection for them. Consequently, in order to have affection for living beings, cultivate the view that they are close to you, like friends or relatives. Since your mother is the closest person to you, cultivate the recognition of all beings as your mothers. Also, recollect their kindness as your mothers and develop the wish to repay their kindness. These three steps are how you learn to cherish and have affection for living beings. The result of these three steps is a love that considers living beings to be beloved, just as a mother considers her only child. This love gives rise to compassion. The casual relationship between compassion and the love that is the wish for beings to have happiness is not definite. These three objectives, recognize all beings as your mother, recollecting their kindness and wishing to repay their kindness, are the basis for both the love that wishes beings to have happiness and the compassion that wishes them to be free from suffering. So you must make effort to cultivate these three. The masters Chandrakriti, Chandragomi, and Kamalashila explained that cultivating the view that living beings are your friends or relatives is the cause of developing the spirit of enlightenment. How wholehearted resolve and the spirit of enlightenment are the effects of compassion. Once you develop compassion through a gradual training of the mind, you generate the desire to attain Buddhahood for the sake of all living beings. This should be enough. Why is it necessary to have step of developing wholehearted resolve in between developing compassion and generate the spirit of enlightenment? Although Sarvakas and Pratikya Buddhas have the immeasurable love and compassion wherever they think, if only beings could have happiness and be free from suffering, these non-Mayana followers do not think. I will take on the responsibility to remove suffering and to provide the happiness of all living beings. Therefore, you must develop a wholehearted resolve that suppresses all other courageous thoughts. It is not enough to think, if only all living beings could have happiness and could be free from suffering. You must also wholeheartedly assume the responsibility of producing this yourself. Consequently, you should distinguish between these ways of thinking. The questions of Sakaramati Sutra says, suppose Sakaramati, a household or a merchant, had only one son, and this son was attractive, beloved, appealing, and pleasing. Suppose that because the son was young and playful, he fell into a pit of filth. When his mother and relatives noticed that he had fallen into it, they cried out, lamented, and grieved, but they did not enter the pit and take him out. When the boy's father arrived and saw that his son has fallen into this pit of filth, however, his only thought was to save him, and without revulsion, jump into the pit of filth and pull him out. To make the connection between the meaning and the parts of the analogy, the pit of filth represents the three realms. The only child represents the living beings, and the mother and other relatives represent Sarvakas and Pratigya Buddhas, who see beings fall into cyclic existence, grieve and lament, but are not able to save them. The merchant or householder represents the Bodhisattva. Hence, this is saying that Sarvakas and Pratigya Buddhas have the compassion which is like that of mother for their beloved only son who has fallen into a field of filth. In order to generate a mind of equanimity, is that we, for the ordinary beings, we only have a compassion which is only one-sided, which loves and compassion only for a limited people or one-sided. So, in order to gain a greater compassion, it's important that first we have to generate the equanimity, mind of equanimity to all sentient beings. So only through that you can generate the greater compassion. Once you intend to liberate all beings, you realize that in your present condition, you cannot fulfill the aims of even a single being. Moreover, even if you attain the highest state of two arahats, and still only be able to fulfill the aim of liberation for merely a few living beings and will be unable to establish them in omniscience. Therefore, if you think, who can fulfill all the temporary and final aims of limitless living beings? You will realize that only a Buddha has this ability. Then you will develop the desire to attain Buddhahood for the sake of these beings. We are on page number 37. Furthermore, with regard to attachment to friends, the daughter, like the finest moon's discourse sutra, says, formerly I have killed all of you, and you have slashed and dismembered me. All of us have been mutual enemies and killed one another. How could you be attached? In accordance with my previous explanation in the section on fault uncertainty, think about how all friends and enemies can quickly change. By thinking in this way, stop both hostility and attachment. In this context, your contemplation requires you to make the distinction between friend and enemy. In generally terms, we have a designation of enemy and friend. Having affection for all beings, Kamala Shila's second stage of meditation says, moistened by love, your mind becomes like fertile, fertile soil. When you plant the seed of compassion, it grows easily and bountifully. Therefore, after you infuse your mind with love, cultivate compassion. The love mentioned here views living beings with affection as if they were their dear children. By cultivating impartiality, you eliminate the unevenness in attitude that comes from the bias of your attachment and hostility, and your mind becomes like a good field. Kamala Shila says here that if you moisten your mind with the water of love, which views all living beings with affection, and you then plant the healthy seed of compassion, you will easily generate great compassion. Understand this to be an extremely important point. We're in page number 39. Sorry, page number 38. Cultivating a remembering for their kindness. Buddha was said that after you have recognized all living beings are your mothers, you will quickly remember their kindness. If at first you cultivate a remembrance of your mother's kindness in this lifetime, do so in accordance with his presentation as follows. Imagine your mother clearly in front of you. Think the following a few times. Not only has she been my mother at present, but she has been so an incalculable number of times throughout beginless cycle existence. As your mother, she protected you from all harm and provided you all benefit and happiness. Please bring the side table limb a little bit closer till here. The throne is so big, I can even sleep on it. Sometimes I think it's better to sleep. You can also fall asleep. I will sleep on the throne. But there only on one condition you can sleep. You are not allowed to snore. If you snore, then your neighbor... people will be disturbed. Imagine your mother clearly in front of you. Think the following a few times. Not only has she been my mother at present, but she has been so an incalculable number of times throughout beginless cycle existence. As your mother, she protected you from all harm and provided you all benefit and happiness. Particularly in this lifetime, she carried you for a long time in our womb. Then when you were a helpless newborn infant, she held you to the womb of her flesh and bound you on the tips of her 10 fingers. I almost misspelled when we try to playfully between the Uzang and the Kham regions. Sometimes the Zangba, he came to Lhasa, the one Zangba. And under the strobe, it's written that my homage to Lama Tsongkhapa, and the one who comes from, the nobleman who comes from Zhang, even though he cannot read it well, but acting as he can read it very well, the strip of Bao Keling, he read the misread like Sharhong Kabelo Sangta, means he was not able to clearly cut the passage, so it make a big mistake. So similarly here, the Tibetan term Majeba, I was not able to correctly post where it is necessary to be posted. Page number 39, the last paragraph. Cultivating the wish to repay your mother's kindness. These beings, your kind mothers, are suffering and have no refuge. There is nothing more shameful than to do your best to liberate yourself from cyclic existence while considering these beings, your mothers, unimportant and abandoning them. Chandra Gomi's letter to a student states, while you see that your relatives are engulfed in the ocean of cyclic existence and are as if fallen into a pit of fire, there is nothing more shameful than to work for your own liberation, neglecting those whom you do not recognize due to the process of death and rebirth. Therefore, reflect, if abandoning such kind beings is unsuitable even for disputable persons, how could it be appropriate in my case, and then assume the responsibility to repay their kindness. The same text states, the infant on the mother's lap cannot do anything and suckles milk which follows through love. While through the same love, the mother endures many hardships, who even among the very disputable would like to abandon his or her mother, who even among the most disputable wants to leave and abandon those who provided a home, who carefully look after the child with compassion and who were afflicted without refuge and suffering. Sri Ratna Dasa's praise of infinite qualities states, it is not my way to liberate myself while abandoning these beings, whose blind ignorance ruins their intelligence, and who are my fathers and children serving and lovingly helping me. Thinking this, I made aspirational prayers to liberate these protectorless beings. How can you repay their help? No matter how much wealth and happiness your mothers obtain in cyclic existence, it all deceives them. Thus, you must rebate their health, thinking, formerly my mothers were seriously wanted because the madness of the afflictions possessed them. Then I produce a variety of further sufferings for these beings who are already suffering as if I had able to see it. I think in the personal parameter text in the fourth chapter about the part two accumulations, it is stated about compassions, simulate compassions like father, compassions like mother. So in terms of relatives who are much near to your mothers or relatives, because some person, there are many people who are not so attached or not so lovingly attached to their mothers. So for those persons, you can imagine or meditate upon a person whom you are so dear to, or who are so kind to you. How can you repay their health? No matter how much wealth and happiness your mother obtained inside. Sorry. Baba Viveka's heart of the middle way states, furthermore, like applying salt to the wounds of those who have been possessed. Page number 41. By the madness of their afflictions, I created suffering for those sick with suffering. Now, what else is there other than Nirvana? Now, what else is there other than Nirvana to repay the health of those who in other lives helped me with love and service? It is said that a kindness unrepaid weighs more than the heavy burden of the ocean together with Mount Meru, and that repaying others' kindness occasions the praise of the learned. The verses from the Naga King's Drum says, the ocean, Mount Meru, and the earth are not a burden to me, whereas not repaying others' kindness is a great burden to me. The learned praise persons whose minds are not excited, who recognize and repay others' deeds, and who do not waste others' kindness. In brief, your mother is cursed. I have a short announcement between this. New PAPs are being issued this week and copies are available in the Jiangsu Lamrim Teaching Organizing Committee office and at the Tibetan Settlement Office in Camp No. 3. If you have friends who are waiting for their PAP, please check this list for their names. This is a new list available today. Thank you. In brief, your mother is caressed, unable to remain composed. She is blind, has no guide, and stumbles with every step as she approaches a frightful precipice. If she cannot place hope in her child, in whom can she place hope? If her child does not take responsibility for freeing her from this terror, who should take responsibility? Or shall I set her free? Likewise, the madness of the affliction disturbs the peace of mind of living beings, your mother. Thus they are crazed because they have no control of their minds. They lack eyes to see the path to high status and certain goodness. They have no true teacher who is a guide for the blind. They stumble because their wrongdoing cripples them at each moment. When these mothers see the edge of the precipice of cyclic existence in general and the miserable realms in particular, they naturally take hope in their children, and the children have a responsibility to get their mothers out of this situation. Therefore, with this in mind, repay your mother's kindness by definitely causing them to emerge from cyclic existence. Shantideva's compendium of training says, crazed by the afflictions, blinded by ignorance, stumbling with each step, on the path with many a precipice. You and others are always subject to sorrow, all beings have similar sufferings. Although it is said that it is improper to look for others' faults, and it is wonderful to notice even a single virtue, here it is appropriate to consider how others are helpless. The development of attitude of being intent on others' welfare. The development of the attitude of being intent on others' welfare is three parts. The cultivation of love. In order to understand the cultivation of love, you must know the following topics. The object of love is living beings who do not have happiness. The subjective aspect of thinking how nice it will be if beings are happy. May they be happy and I will cause them to be happy. With respect to the benefits of love, the king of concentration sutra states, always offering to superior beings as many countless sufferings as their billions of lands does not equal a portion of the benefit of a loving attitude. It says that the benefit of love is for greater merit than continually making one's offerings to the highest recipients. Also, the area of qualities in Manjushri's Buddha realm states, in the northeast is the land of conqueror Bodhisattva, Bodhisattva called decorated by a thousand universes. Their living beings have a happiness which is like the bliss of a monk who is experiencing a cessation. If you generate a loving attitude here in Jambudeva toward all living beings for mere snap of the fingers, the merit produced greatly surpasses the merit gained by keeping pure conduct there for 1 trillion years. Moreover, Nagarjuna's precious garland states, I read again here, always offering to the superior beings as many countless offerings as there are in billions of lands does not equal a portion of the benefit of a loving attitude. It says that the benefit of love is for greater merit than continually making vast offerings to the highest recipients. Also, the area of qualities in Manjushri's Buddha realm states, in the northeast is the land of conqueror Bodhisattva called decorated by a thousand universes. Their living beings have happiness which is like the bliss of a monk who experienced a cessation. If you generate a loving attitude here in Jambudeva toward all living beings for merely a snap of fingers, the merit produced greatly surpasses the merit gained by keeping pure contact there for 1 trillion years. Is there any need to mention the merit of abiding in a loving attitude both day and night? Moreover, Nagarjuna's precious garland states, to offer 300 small pots of food even 3 times a day does not equal a portion of the merit of a fraction of an instant of love. Even if you are not liberated through love, you will attain its 8 good qualities. Deities and humans will love you, they will also protect you. You will have joy and much physical pleasure. Poison and weapons will not harm you. You will attain your aims effortlessly and be reborn in the world of Brahma. If you have love, deities and humans will love you and will naturally gravitate towards you. Moreover, the conqueror defeated Mara's armies with the power of love, so love is a supreme protector and so forth. Thus, although love is difficult to develop, you must strive to do so. The compendium of trainings said that you should think wholeheartedly about the verses of the Sutra of the Golden Light, which discuss the cultivation of love and compassion. It further says that you should at least recite and meditate on the following verse from the Sutra. Through the sound of the sacred Golden Light's great drum, may the sufferings of the miserable realms, the sufferings brought on by the lot of death, the sufferings of poverty and all suffering be extinguished in the three realms of universe of 3 billion world systems. On page number 44, the cultivation of compassion. In order to understand the cultivation of compassion, you must know the following topics. The object of compassion is living beings who experience misery through any of the three kinds of sufferings. The subjective aspects are thinking how nice it will be if living beings were free from suffering. May they be free from suffering, and I will cause them to be free from suffering. The step of cultivating compassion are first to cultivate it towards friends, then toward those beings for whom you have neutral feelings, and next toward enemies. When you have equal compassion for your enemies and friends, cultivate it gradually to all living beings in the 10 directions. Kamala Shila, following the discourses on knowledge, set out this way of gradually cultivating impartiality, love, and compassion while distinguishing specific objects of meditation. It is an extremely important point. If you train in these attitudes of impartiality, love, and compassion without distinguishing and taking of specific objects of meditation, but only using a general object from the outset, you will just seem to generate these attitudes. That when you try to apply them to specific individuals, you will not be able to actually generate these attitudes towards anyone. But once you have a transformative experience toward an individual in your meditation practice, as explained previously, you may then gradually increase the number of individuals you visualize within your meditation. Finally, take all beings in general as your object of meditation. When you sustain this practice in meditation, you will generate these attitudes correctly, whether you are dealing with individuals or a group. The way to cultivate compassion is as follows. Consider how these living beings, your mothers, experience general and specific sufferings after falling into cyclic existence. I explained these sufferings earlier. Moreover, if you have developed awareness of your own general and specific sufferings by training in the path of a person of medium capacity, you will access your own situation and cultivate compassion toward others. By following this method, you will easily generate compassion, considering your own suffering, increase the determination to be free, thinking about others' suffering, increase compassion. However, if you do not first consider your own suffering, you will not reach the key point of practice. These are simple illustrations of how to meditate. Intelligent persons should meditate in detail on 110 sufferings that are observed with compassion. These are explained in the Bodhisattva levels. Furthermore, it is said the Bodhisattva's thoughts of suffering during their cultivation of compassion are more numerous than Sarvaka's thoughts, which perceive sufferings with an attitude of disenchantment, the final and actual knowledge of the truth of suffering for the Sarvakas. If you reflect from limitless viewpoints of how beings lack happiness and have suffering, you will develop much love and compassion. Moreover, if you think about this for a long time, your love and compassion will be strong and steady. Therefore, if you are satisfied with just a little personal instruction and neglect to familiarize yourself with the explanations of the classical texts, your compassion and love will be very weak. Moreover, after you have thoroughly distinguished the objects of meditation accordingly to the previous explanations, how compassion is the root, how the development of the spirit of enlightenment is the entrance to Madhyana and so forth, you must then analyze these explanations with discerning wisdom and elicit the experience produced after sustaining them in meditation. You will not achieve anything with the unclear experience that comes when you make a short, concentrated effort without precisely clarifying the topic with your understanding. Note that this is true for other kinds of practice as well. Kamala Shila's first stages of meditation gives a measure for the development of compassion. When you spontaneously feel compassion, which is the subjective wish to completely eliminate the sufferings of all living beings, just like a mother's wish to remove her dear child's unhappiness, then your compassion is complete and is therefore called great compassion. Here, Kamaleshila says that when you spontaneously feel compassion for all beings commensurate with the mother's compassion for her dear and small suffering child, then you have completely perfect great compassion. Through this, understand the measure for the development of great love as well. Taking that passage as point of departure, Kamaleshila says, when you have committed yourself to being a guide for all living beings, as conditioned yourself to great compassion, you effortlessly generate the spirit of enlightenment, which is the nature of aspiring to excel perfect enlightenment. Page number 47. Sorry, page number 46. For instance, the last paragraph. For instance, in engaging in the Bodhisattva deeds, first there is a description of adopting the script of enlightenment and taking the vow, and then a detailed explanation of how to practice the spirit of enlightenment in the context of meditative stabilization. However, even in order to establish yourself as a proper recipient for these practices, you must first train in many kinds of early attitudes. After you have trained your mind with thinking of the benefits by practicing the seven branches of worship and by going for refuge, and after you have come to understand the trainings, then you develop the desire to maintain the spirit of enlightenment. Some say rightly, through merely uttering the words, that in order to progress on the path, you must go on increasing your knowledge of emptiness. In order to progress on the path, you must likewise first sustain the spirit of enlightenment in meditation and then increase it in an ever more special way the higher you go. But those persons do not even merely utter these words. This is the one way traveled by all the conquerors, the 22 kinds of spirit of enlightenment taught in the ornament for clear knowledge. Understand this from the great trailblazer's explanations concerning how to progress on the path by means of these two, the spirit of enlightenment and the knowledge of emptiness. The cultivation of wholehearted resolve. At the conclusion of meditating on love and compassion, think, alas, these dear living beings for whom I feel affection are deprived of happiness and tormented by suffering. How can I provide them happiness and free them from suffering? Thinking this way, train your mind in at least this thought in order to take on the responsibility to delivering these living beings. Even though this thought was described in the context of the practice of repaying your mother's kindness, here it indicates that it is insufficient to have the compassion and love which merely think. How nice it will be if they have happiness, if they had happiness and were free from suffering. For the thought that assumes responsibility shows that you must develop the compassion and love which have the power to induce the result. I will provide happiness and benefit to all living beings. It is very effective if you practice this continuously, being mindful of it in all of your physical activities during the period of post-meditation and so on, not just during the meditation sessions. Kamaleshila's second stages of meditation says, cultivate this compassion to all beings at all times, whether you are in meditative concentration or in the course of any other activity. Page number 48, here compassion is just one example. You must do the same when sustaining any meditation. The great master Chandragomi states, since beginningless time the tree of mind has been moistened with the bitter juice of the afflictions, and you were unable to sweeten its taste, how could a drop of water of good qualities affect it? Thus he says, for example, that you cannot sweeten the very bitter and large trunk of the thick tree by pouring just one drop of sugarcane juice into it. Similarly, the mind stream which has been infused in beginningless time with the bitter afflictions will not change at all from just a short cultivation of the good qualities of love, compassion, and so forth. Therefore, you must sustain your meditation continuously, training the mind to be intent on enlightenment. Once you have been inspired by the aforementioned process and have seen that you need enlightenment for the sake of others' welfare, you develop the wish to attain it. However, this is not enough. First, increase your faith as much as possible by contemplating the good qualities of Bodhisattva's body, speech, and mind and enlightened activities as previously explained in the section on going for refuge. Now the middle length lamrim. on the page number 132, Middle and Lumrim. Demonstrating that generating the mind of enlightenment is the only gateway to Mahayana. This is 8 points, ascertaining the Mahayana as to the sutra and mantra vehicles, and generating the mind of enlightenment is the only gateway to it. Therefore, as it is necessary to enter the mind, you come to think about how it is to be entered. There is no Mahayana apart from the two, the perfection and mantra vehicles taught by the victor. Whichever of the two one may enter, the only gateway is the mind of enlightenment. Whenever it is arisen in the continuum, even though nothing else is arisen, one is posited as a Mahayanist. Whereas, whenever one is separated from it, whenever positive qualities one has, whatever positive qualities one has, such as the realization of emptiness and so forth, one will fall into the level of hearer and the like and fall away from Mahayana. This is taught in numerous texts of the Mahayana and is also established by reasonings. Therefore, whether one is a Mahayanist is determined by whether one is this mind or not. Thus, in engaging in the bodhisattva contact, it says that as soon as this mind has arisen, you become a child of the victors. Likewise, in Life of Maitreya, it says, child of the lineage, it is like this. For example, a diamond, even broken, outshines all gold jewelry, however refined. It does not lose its name, diamond, and avers all poverty. Child of the lineage, likewise, the diamond that is mind generated in omniscient, even without effort, outshines all the gold jewelry, that is positive qualities of the hearers and solitary realizers. The name Bodhisattva is not lost, and all the misfortunes of cyclic existence are averted. If that mind exists even in someone untrained in contact, he is said to be a Bodhisattva. Therefore, it is not sufficient for the Dhamma to be Mahayana. Rather, it is important that the person has entered the Mahayana. Whether you become a Mahayanist depends on the mind of enlightenment itself. If that mind is no more than an intellectual understanding, your being a Mahayanist is the same. On the other hand, if you have a fully qualified mind of enlightenment, you will also become a completely pure Mahayanist. Therefore, you should strive for that. With respect to this, it says in the area of Stock Sutra, child of the lineage, the mind of enlightenment is like the seat of all the Dhamma of the Buddha. Since you need to gain certainty about this, it will be explained. Since water, manure, heat, soil, and so forth act as causes for a rice sprout, when combined with the rice grain and act as causes for sprouts of wheat, pulses, and so forth, when combined with their respective seeds, they are common causes. Since a barley seed is not suitable as a cause of a rice sprout and so forth, even if the conditions are gathered together, it is the uncommon cause of a barley sprout, while the water, manure, and so forth that cooperates with it are the common causes of the barley sprout. Similarly, among the causes for a Buddha sprout, the mind of unsurpassed enlightenment like the seed is the uncommon cause, whereas the wisdom realizing emptiness like the water, manure, and so forth is the common cause of the three enlightenments. That is why the statement in Sublime Continuum, dedication to the Supreme Vehicle is the seed, wisdom is the mother that gives birth to the Buddha Dhamma. Since the dedication to the Supreme Vehicle is like the father seed, and the wisdom realizing selflessness is like the mother. For instance, since a Tibetan father cannot have a child which is Indian or Mongolian, the father is the cause that determines the lineage. On the other hand, a Tibetan mother is like the common cause, since she can give birth to different children. In his praise to the perfection of wisdom, Nagarjuna also says that hearers and solitary realizers equally rely on it. Buddha, Pratigya Buddhas, and hearers definitely rely on you. Singular path to liberation, it is true to say there is no other. That is why the perfection of wisdom is also said to be the mother, since it is the mother of the sons of both the Mahayana and Hinayana. It is not the wisdom realizing emptiness that distinguishes the Mahayana and Hinayana. Rather, it is the mind of enlightenment and the vast contact that distinguishes them. In precious garland, they are also taught to be differentiated not by the view but by the contact. The hearer's vehicle does not explain the Bodhisattva's aspiration, nor the contact of full dedication. How could Bodhisattvas emerge from it? Therefore, even if the wisdom realizing emptiness is not an uncommon path of the Mahayana, what need is there to mention other paths? For that reason, it is necessary to train in the mind of enlightenment. Having met instructions on it, one's main concern. The explanation of how to generate the mind of enlightenment, I'll go by the outlines. How to generate this mind, it is 3 points, the stages of training the mind of enlightenment, explanation on how to train the mind by means of sevenfold instruction on cause and effect. And the sevenfold instruction on cause and effect transmitted from the great elder has 2 points, short presentation and extensive presentation. Short presentation, the sevenfold cause and effect is the seven. A complete Buddha is born from the mind of enlightenment. This mind from the extraordinary attitude, this attitude from compassion, and compassion from love, love from the wish to repay the kindness, the wish to repay the kindness from remembering the kindness, and remembering the kindness from seeing being as one's mother. Extensive explanation as 2 points, generating certainty concerning the stages, the actual gradual training. Page number 135. Generating certainty concerning the stages, demonstrating that compassion is the root of Mayana. The importance of compassion at the beginning. The importance of compassion in the middle. The importance of compassion at the end. Page number 136. The actual importance at the end has 2 points, the difference between Buddhas and hearers. All three external analogies symbolize compassion only. In particular, the advice to make the mind of enlightenment the focus of instruction. This has 2 points, the need to make it the essence of one's practice. Since it is difficult to gain certainty about this, it is necessary to rely on accumulation, purification, and the scriptures. The way in which other causes and effects become causes and effect of that compassion has 2 points. The way in which from understanding as mothers through love are causes. The way in which extraordinary attitude and the generation of the mind of enlightenment are effects. The way in which from understanding as mothers through love are causes. This is 5 points. If you think again and again about the suffering of a sentient being, this will generally give rise to the mere wish that it be free from suffering. However, for this mind to arise easily and for it to arise very strong and stable, to start with it must be a sentient being who has the aspect of being attractive and valuable. For when someone close to us meets with suffering, we cannot bear it. When our enemies meet with suffering, we enjoy it. And when someone who is neither a friend nor an enemy meets with suffering, melee and equanimity that neglects him arises. When page number 137. In this regard, since the former is attractive to our mind, the more we cherish him, the more his suffering will be unbearable to us, and the more compassion will arise for him. If we cherish him a little or somewhere between a little and a lot, our inability to hear his suffering will also be small. On the other hand, if we cherish someone very much, we cannot bear it at all when he meets with very slight suffering. When we see our enemy suffering, not only does the wish that he be free from it fail to arise, but rather thought occurs to us, may this suffering increase and may he not be free from it. That is our reaction to someone we find unattractive. Moreover, our joy at this suffering will also be greater and smaller depending on how unattractive he is. With respect to the suffering of someone who is neither a friend nor an enemy, it is neither that we cannot bear it nor that we enjoy it. That is our reaction when someone is neither attractive nor unattractive. If this is done, meditating on sentient beings as our relatives is for the sake of making them attractive to us. However, since the person we are most closely related to is our mother, the three meditating on them as having been our mother, remembering their kindness and the wish to repay their kindness, establishes them as dear, as attractive. The love that holds sentient beings to be delightful as an only child is the effect of these three. It produces compassion. With respect to the love that wishes them to meet with happiness and compassion, there does not seem to be any certainty as to which one is the cause and which one is the effect. This meditation on sentient beings as our relatives has been explained by Acharya Chandrakirti, Venerable Chandra, the Acharya Kamaleshila as the cause for the mind of enlightenment to arise. The way in which extraordinary attitude and the generation of the mind of enlightenment are effects, this is 2 points, the doubt and response. It should really be sufficient if compassion having arisen due to such a gradual training of the mind, the wish arises to attain enlightenment for the welfare of all sentient beings. Why is the extraordinary attitude inserted between them? This is 2 points. Although there is immeasurable compassion, there may not be the extraordinary attitude of taking the responsibility upon oneself. Page number 138. Although hearers and solitary realizers also have the immeasurable compassion and love that they think, if only sentient beings were to meet with happiness and only they were free from suffering, still those who are not Mahayanists do not take the responsibility to accomplish happiness for all sentient beings and to eliminate their suffering. Therefore, it is necessary to generate the extraordinary attitude, the special attitude of those with brave hearts. You understand this from a quotation from the sutra requested by Sagaramati in the commentary on the Sublime Continuum. Once the mind to free sentient being has arisen in this manner, owing to your current situation, you could not complete even the welfare of one sentient being. Not only that, even if you were to attain the state of two kinds of arhats, you would only be able to complete the welfare of a few beings, and their welfare will be merely accomplished liberation. Since they cannot establish them in omniscience, who could complete the temporary and final welfare of limitless beings? If you reflect in this vein, you will come to understand that only a Buddha is able to do this, and you will generate the wish to attain Buddhahood for the welfare of sentient beings. The actual gradual training, the training in the mind striving for the welfare of others, laying foundation for generating this mind, producing an economic mind towards sentient beings. Let's turn to page number 139. Among the two types of economies mind that have been taught, one that is the aspect of establishing living beings lacking mental afflictions such as attachment, hatred and so forth, and one in which oneself is free from attachment and hatred towards sentient beings is here, it is the later. Since this is the order of meditation by which it will easily arise, initially you should take as your object of meditation a person who has neither helped nor harmed you, and through eliminating attachment and anger, and accomplish an economist mind. When an economist mind towards that person has been accomplished, you then need to accomplish an economist mind with respect to friends and relatives. A non-economist mind towards them is to be biased due to attachment and hatred, or not to be economist due to lesser or greater attachments. When you are economist towards them, you should cultivate an economist mind towards your enemies. The lack of economity towards them is due to hatred that derives from seeing them as totally incompatible with yourself. Having become economist toward them, you should cultivate an economist mind toward all sentient beings. Moreover, the following two thoughts are taught in Kamalashila stages of meditation, the middle length of meditation, since from their side all sentient beings are the same in wanting happiness and not wanting suffering, it will be inappropriate for me to benefit some whom I consider close and harm, or fail to benefit others whom I consider distant. And since from my own side there is not any sentient being who in beginless silent existence has not been my relative hundreds of times, who should I have attachment for and who should I have hatred for? Also with regard to attachment to our relatives, the sutra requested by noble daughter Chandratara says, in former times I killed each one of you. I was also formerly chopped by you. We all have been foes and murderers unto each other. How can a mind of attachment arise in you? As was explained above in the context of the fault of uncertainty, you should think about the way in which friends and enemies quickly change. In this manner, you will avert both anger and attachment. We need to differentiate between friends and enemies, having apprehended them to be the basis of their respective features. Therefore, what is to be seized is the mind that is biased due to attachment and hatred, taking as a reason that someone alleging someone to be a friend or enemy, whereas the mind of friend and enemy does not need to be averted. Accomplishing that all sentient beings have an attractive aspect, this is 3 points, meditating on all sentient beings as one mother, page number 140. In the sutras, it is taught that since cyclic existence is beginningless, our births are also beginningless. Therefore, we have been born and we have died incessantly, so that there is nobody inside the existence that we have not taken, no place where we have not been born, and also no one who has not been a relative such as our mother. Moreover, this is not only true of the past, they will again be in the future. Therefore, reflecting in that way, you should try to gain strong certainty that they have been your mother. For once that certainty arises, it will be easier to remember their kindness and so forth. On the other hand, if it does not arise, there will be no foundation for remembering their kindness and so forth. Remembering their kindness. This is 5 points. Geshe-Potawa maintained that the thought of remembering their kindness will arise quickly if, after meditating on all sentient beings as your mothers, you initially meditate on your mother of this life. You should meditate like that. You should visualize your mother in front of you in a clear aspect and repeatedly reflect, she has been my mother not only now, but times past counting since beginningless cycle existence. That way, when she was my mother, she protected me from all harm and accomplished all happiness and benefit for me. The way in which she also protected you in this life. Third, a mother cherishes her child more than herself. Fourth, how to meditate on the essential points separately. Five, how to meditate progressing gradually. Page number 141. Meditating on repaying their kindness. These are 4 points. Even though you do not recognize them due to birth, death and transmigration, it will be shameful to neglect them. Second, to neglect those who have been kind does not accord with self-manner. Third, as it will be inappropriate to repay the benefit with something contaminated, one should liberate them from ignorance. Fourth, how to meditate on the essential points of Ridley. Page number 142. The actual generation of that mind striving for the welfare of others. This is 3 points. Meditating on love. This is 7 points. The observed object of love for sentient beings who are not endowed with happiness. His expects is the thought, how wonderful it will be if they were to meet with happiness. May they meet with happiness, and I will make them meet with happiness. As regards the benefit, it says in the King of Meditative Stabilization Sutra, many kinds of offerings without measure in merits of neighboring pure lands, constantly offered to the most excellent beings, fall short of a fraction of the love of mind of love. This is to say that merit is much greater than that of constantly making offerings of things to the field that is final object with these vast things. Also in the area of qualities in Manjushri's Buddha-ram, it is explained in the world spirit called Thousand Ornaments of the Great King Buddha Buddheshwara, at the northeastern border, sentient beings possess a happiness similar to the happiness of monks who have entered cessation. If a mind of love to all sentient beings generated in this field for as little as the duration of a finger snap produces far more merit than a celibate predicts in pure contact there for 100,000 millions of years, what need is there to mention that of abiding in that mind day and night? In Nagarjuna's precious salon, we also find 300 small pots of food one offers 3 times every day fall short of the merit of love sustained for the duration of just 1 moment. You are loved by gods and humans. They protect you as well, and you have mental happiness and much happiness. Poisons and weapons can do no more harm. You achieve your goals without effort and will be born in the world of Brahma. Even if you do not reach liberation, you will win the 8 qualities of love. If you have love, you are loved by gods and means, and they naturally gather around you. Since even the victors defeat the hosts of Mara by force of love, it becomes the best of protectors and so forth. The stages of meditation on love are to respectfully meditate initially on love for your friends and relatives, and then for neutral persons, then for enemies, and then for all sentient beings. The way in which to meditate on love is as follows. Just as compassion arises when you reflect again and again on how sentient beings have the suffering of suffering, likewise you should reflect again and again on how sentient beings like contaminated and uncontaminated happiness and on the manners in which they are devoid of happiness. Once you have familiarized yourself with this, the wish for them to meet with happiness will arise naturally. In addition, having directed your mind to the various kinds of happiness, you will then provide sentient beings with them. Meditating on compassion. This is 6 points. The observed object of compassion. Second, the aspect of compassion. Third, the sequence of the meditations on compassion. Fourth, the main point of meditating in that sequence. Fifth, the way to meditate. Final, the measure of arising of compassion. When page number 144, meditating on extraordinary attitude. This is 2 points. Having meditated on love and compassion in this manner, finally you will think, alas, if these sentient beings who are pleasant and attractive to me are thus deprived of happiness and tormented by sufferings, how shall I make them meet with happiness and how shall I free them from suffering? In taking upon yourself, at least in mere words, the responsibility to liberate them, your mind is trained. Although this point has already been made briefly in the context of repaying their kindness, it is shown here that the love and compassion, that how wonderful it will be if they were to meet with happiness, and how wonderful it will be if they were free from suffering, are not sufficient. This is because of the need that was taught to generate the love and compassion capable of inducing the thought, I myself will accomplish the happiness and benefit of sentient beings. This is not to be done just during meditation sessions, but is to be sustained continuously, remembering it during all behaviors after the sessions and so forth, as is taught in the stages of meditation. Training in the mind, striving for enlightenment. Once you realized, urged by the steps explained so far, that the enlightenment is necessary for the welfare of others, you will also develop the wish to attain it. Nonetheless, since that in itself is not sufficient, at the beginning you should increase your faith through thinking about the positive qualities of the exalted body, exalted speech, exalted mind, and enlightened activities that they are explained. So when the great treatise of stages about enlightenment, Lamrim Chemo, exchanging self with other. The trainings based on the teachings of Concurrent Charles Shantideva. The training based on the teachings of Concurrent Charles Shantideva is 3 points. Contemplating the benefit of exchanging self and other and the fault of not exchanging self and other. The ability to exchange self and other if you accustom yourself to the thought of doing so. Engaging in the Bodhisattva teachings. Whoever wishes to quickly protect self and other must exchange self for other. Practice this excellent secret. And whatever worldly joy there is arises from wishing for others' happiness. Whatever worldly suffering there is arises from wishing for your own happiness. What need is there to say more? Look at the difference between these two. Ordinary persons act for their own welfare. The sage acts for others' welfare. If you do not genuinely exchange your own happiness for other suffering, you will not achieve Buddhahood. And even in cyclic existence, you will have no joy. Consider how being self-centered is a door to all suffering and being other-centered is the basis of all excellence. The ability to exchange self and other if you accustom yourself to the thought of doing so. Take the example of your enemy become a friend. At first, when you hurt even the neighbor, your enemy feel arose. Later, fear arose. Later you will reconcile and become such close friends that when this new friend was absent, you were very unhappy. This reversal resulted from familiarizing your mind with a new attitude. So likewise, if you become habituated to being yourself as you presently view others, and to viewing others as you presently view yourself, you will exchange self and other. Engaging in the Bodhisattva teachings says, do not turn away from this difficulty. Although you were frightened upon hearing someone's name, now due to the power of conditioning, you dislike that person's absence. And also it is not difficult to consider my body with the perspective I have toward on another's body. Since someone else's body is not your body, how can you develop the same attitude that you have toward your own? Your body was produced from your father's semen and your mother's blood. Even though it was produced from a portion of semen, someone else's body, you conceive it to be your own by the influence of previous conditioning. Similarly, if you become accustomed to cherishing another's body as you presently do your own, you will view it with the same perspective that you now toward your own body. Engaging in the Bodhisattva's deed says, therefore, just as you conceive I with respect to the drops of semen and blood of others, so you can be conditioned to cherishing others as you to yourself. Reflect thoroughly on the benefits of being self-other-centered and the faults of being self-centered. Thereby, you will produce from the depths of your heart a great delight in meditating on the exchange of self and other. Then recognize that you can actually generate it once you have become habituated to it. The stages of meditating on how to exchange self and other. The phrases exchanging self and other and making oneself others and others oneself do not indicate a training in an attitude which thinks I am others or others' eyes, etc., are mine. They indicate a change in the orientation of two states of mind, which are reaching yourself and neglecting others. So thinking that the self and other does not exist intrinsically or naturally. And similarly, the mind comprehending self as existing self-substantially is also same. And also, the self-centered feeling is also accompanied with the mind of comprehending everything existing by itself. So, the self and other, which appears like existing innately or intrinsically, but in reality it is not so. So it, if you are able to see to it that it does not exist innately, then of course it becomes it harms or it becomes antidote to the feeling of self-center, which is combined with the afflicted emotions. As I've explained before, the real self, with backed by the wisdom and intelligence, if you're able to benefit yourself immediate and for the ultimate goals, then it is really fortunate and fruitful. I think for this, the engaging in the deeds of Bodhisattva texts composed by Shantidevas is very immense and helpful. I think it's stated that it's being composed in the 8th century, and from 8th century to till the 20th century, for over 1,000 years, the training in the mind of exchanging self and others, and also training in the mind of bodhicitta, there is no other text or no other greater than what is being explained in this text. And even in India, there are many practitioners who are following this. And even in Tibet, irrespective of the different sects of Sakya, Gakyu, and all the traditions, all the practitioners follow this text for practicing the bodhicitta. So this is really very, very precious. There is no reason or there is no purpose in saying that, but for me, the realization of emptiness, the view of emptiness, I'm trying hard to gain understanding of the emptiness. For the last 30 years, I have a rough image of the understanding of the provision wisdom of emptiness. But for the bodhicitta, the mind for enlightenment, I always saw it as something very far, something not to be accumulated or gained immediately. But from the later part of my 30s to 40s, something around the year of 1967, I received a teaching from Kuno Lama Tenzin Gyatso, the transmission of Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way, and from there on, I developed a very close relation with this text, and this text is very powerful. And most importantly, through this text, it proves through the logical reasonings, the faults and the mistakes of self-centered feeling are explained evidently in front of us. But many things are not able to prove logical reasoning evidently to all of us. But through this text, the faults and mistakes and the problems that it will bring by the fault of self-centered and the beneficial qualities of other-centered or the feeling to cherish others are very evidently explained. But for certain kinds of personalities, it will be easier for them to practice or train in the exchange of self and others. And through these practices, so for them it is easier to generate a mind for enlightenment through the first generating the great compassion and then extraordinary intent. And gradually from that, recollecting the mother's kindness and also special mind recollecting the mind's kindness. And from that, gradually generating the mind of exchanging self with others, thinking about the beneficial qualities of self-center and the fallen mistakes of self-center. Then from it, gradually generating the compassion and love and the extraordinary intent. So the both ways of generating the bodhicitta through seven cause and effect instruction and exchanging self-others are actually have to be combined together to be practiced. Page number 54, you must remove the obstacle of thinking, I will not make an effort to dispel other suffering because other suffering does not harm me. It would be like not accumulating wealth in your youth out of fear of suffering in all, because you think that your suffering in all is, does not harm to you in your youth. As stated in the engaging in the bodhisattva, it will be like not eliminating in the pain in your foot, your hand, because your foot is older. Your foot is other, sorry. Old age and youth are just illustration. This principle applies also to morning and evening, former and later days and so forth. But old age and youth are one continuum and foot and hand are one collection. Therefore, they are not the same as self and other. Continuum and collection are designated to many moments and many parts. They do not have self-sufficient existence. The self of yourself and the self of others must be posited to a collection and continuum. So self and other are not established by way of an essence that can be posited independently. However, since beginningless time, you have found your own suffering unbearable because you have been conditioned to self-cherishing. Therefore, if you become conditioned to cherishing others, you will give rise to an attitude of finding others' suffering unbearable. After you have eliminated the obstacles to exchanging self and other in this way, the actual way to meditate is as follows. Out of attachment to self, your self-cherishing attitude has produced all sorts of undesirable things throughout the beginningless time of sightly existence up to now. Although you wanted to make things perfect for yourself, you emphasize your own welfare and engage in improper methods. You have spent countless eons at this but have not at all accomplished your own or others' aims. Not only have you not achieved this, you have been tormented only by suffering. If you have replaced concern for your own welfare with concern for others' welfare, you will certainly have already become a Buddha long ago and would have completely and perfectly accomplished your own aims as well as those of others. As you do not do this, you have spent your time uselessly and laboriously. Make a firm determination by thinking, now I understand the faults of self-cherishing and the benefits of cherishing others. Engaging in the bodhisattva discipline, self-cherishing has harmed me in all, my merit lifetimes in all existence. You, O mind, though you spend countless eons wanting to accomplish your own welfare, through such great hardship, you have accomplished only suffering. And also, if formerly you have acted for others' welfare, this condition which lacks the perfect happiness of Buddhahood could not possibly have occurred. Thus, neither be self-centered nor support self-centered tendencies. You must train again and again in the attitude of freely giving to all beings your own body, resources, and roots of virtues, and you must work for the welfare of those to whom you give these things. Page number 56. If you lose the thought that your body, etc., are for others' welfare and think that you are, think that they are for your own benefit, and if you see them as agents of physical, verbal, or mental harm to others, then stop this way of thinking by contemplating how this previously brought you limitless harm and how you are still mistaken with regard to its appearance of helpfulness, which is false. If you are controlled by this wrong way of thinking, it produces only unbearable suffering. Engaging in the bodhisattva discipline, when you ruined me before, that was another time. Now I recognize you, where will you go? I will destroy all your arrogance. Despite the thought, I still have my welfare, I will sold you to others. Do not be dispirited, offer your energy. If I become careless and do not give you to beings, you will certainly give me over to the guardians of hell. Thus you gave me over the long periods of sufferings, now I remember my grudges and I will destroy your self-thoughts. Similarly, when you repeatedly reflect on the benefits of cherishing others, you produce powerful enthusiasm from the depth of your heart. Discontinue your present attitude of disregarding others and keep your potential disregard of others from arising. Through affectionately viewing others as dear and beloved as much as you can, develop an attitude that cherishes others to the degree to which you previously cherished yourself. Cherish others as you to yourself. To produce the attitude that cherishes beings in this way, you must remember their kindness or recognize that they help you. For example, once farmers see that through sowing healthy seeds, they will reap a good and abundant harvest. They will look a fertile field. Likewise, once you are certain that you will accomplish all the temporary and final well-being through sowing the seeds of generosity and so forth in the field of living beings, you will cherish others, reflect on this, engaging in the Bodhisattva distress. Living beings and conquerors are similar. From them, you achieve a Buddha's qualities. How is it that you do not respect living beings just as you respect conquerors? In reference to this, killing living beings leads you to three miserable realms. If you save others from being killed, you go to a happy realm and have a long life there. In the same way, stealing or giving away your resources, being hostile or cultivating love and compassion will produce results such as leading you respectfully to a miserable realm or to a happy realm. Contemplate especially that you need to focus on living beings as you develop the spirit of enlightenment, and that by accomplishing the bodhisattvas did for the sake of living beings. As rich Buddha would, so these two depend on living beings. Nagarjuna's essay on the spirit of enlightenment states that desirable and undesirable effects are life in the happy or miserable realms in this world arise through the benefit and harm you do to living beings. If you attain unexcelled Buddhahood, independence of living beings, why be at all amazed that in these three realms, the resources of deities or humans, relied upon by Brahma, Indra, and Rudra, and the worldly protectors, are also brought about by just helping living beings? All of the many sufferings living beings experience as animals, hungry ghosts, and hell beings come from harmful living beings. These sufferings of hunger, thirst, violence, and torture, which are difficult to reverse and inexhaustible, are the results of harming living beings. The Saravaka's goal is inferior because they do not emphasize others' welfare, whereas Buddhas attain the final goal because they stress others' welfare. It is said that once you have contemplated the principle here, you should not for even an instant be attached to your own welfare. The essay on the spirit of enlightenment states, with the effort eliminated as a poison, your lack of care for other beings. Don't Sarvakas attain an inferior enlightenment because they lack caring? By not forsaking living beings, perfect Buddhas attain enlightenment. Once Bodhisattvas ascertain the effects arising from helping and not helping, how can they remain even for a moment attached to their own welfare? Therefore, other conquerors should understand their full absorption in others' welfare and the goal of enlightenment arise from the sprout of the spirit of enlightenment, and others they see that its root is compassion. They are very intent on cultivating compassion. They become thoroughly conditioned to it so that their compassion and spirit of enlightenment become firm. Thereupon, they cannot help but engage in the deeds of the great undertaking that is most challenging. The essay on the spirit of enlightenment says, the fruit of enlightenment solely for others' welfare grows from the sprout of the spirit of enlightenment, which has a root of firm compassion. This is what conquerors' children cultivate. One who stabilizes this through conditioning, though initially terrified by the suffering of others, later gives up even the bliss of meditative stabilization and enters the unwavering hell. This is amazing. This is praiseworthy. This is a superior way of excellent beings. Now also develop certainty about these methods by means of sayings of excellent beings as follows. A teacher said, Tibet recognizes bodhisattvas who do not know how to train in love and compassion. Someone then asked, well then, how should bodhisattvas practice? He replied, they must learn in stretches from the beginning. Langri Thangpa said, Shobhava and I have 18 human strategies and one horse strategy for a total of 19. Our human strategy is simple: to develop the spirit of highest enlightenment and then learn to do whatever we do for the sake of living beings. Our horse strategy is this: since self-cherishing keeps the spirit of enlightenment, which is not arisen from arising, and destabilize that which is arising and improving this increase, train by keeping self-cherishing away and doing what you can to damage it. Cherish living beings and do whatever you can to help them. Nenjorba Chembo explained to Jisho Tomtenba that he had this and that meditative concentration wherein the energy balances and absorbs and so forth. Jisho Tomtenba replied, even if you have a meditation undisturbed, even by the beating of a large drum close to your ear, and you do not have love, compassion, and the spirit of enlightenment, you will be reborn in a place that to avoid you must now confess day and night. Tomtenba thinks that Nenjorba Chembo is proceeding so as to cause this rebirth in a state lacking leisure, such as rebirth as an alternate being or formless realm or like. Kamlongpa said, through your disinterest in living beings who are what is more important, you will also do the same to us. Whether you plant the roots of Mahayana or not, or whether you have genuinely entered the Mahayana or not, is founded upon this. Therefore, always consider what you should do to develop this. It is excellent if you do develop them, you will not have let it remaining. So understand the measure of producing the spirit of enlightenment is previously explained. So I will stop here. So mental offering. Repeat the announcement for all the foreigners. New POPs are being issued this week and copies are available in the Changshub Lamrim Teaching Organizing Committee office and at the Tibetan Settlement Office in Camp No. 3. It is the place where you met your entrance pass. If you have friends who are waiting for their POP, please check this list for their names. There is a new list available today. And for another one, the public toilets are available outside gate No. 4. Thank you. So probably I think there won't be any problem that we were not able to finish. So I will today finish at 3 p.m. So a little bit earlier than normally. So after the Lamrim prayer, please say a prayer of vote of truth. Prayer composed by His Holiness for the benefits of the Tibetan cause.